Hello, I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good.
Hello and welcome to a very special presentation of the SC Ballers podcast. I am your host and coach of the Terrace Crew, Matt Ricks. We are here tonight to celebrate the la creme de la creme of NRL Supercoach, the inaugural Golden Baller Awards for the best Supercoach players of the year. We have 8 categories for you tonight, with the major prize, of course, being the Baller MVP Award. And to go through all the awards with me tonight, it's been a long old season, but they're here on deck to award the best of the best. It's Coach of Tubes' Pods, Tubes. Tubes, welcome back to the SC Ballers podcast.
Yeah, Matt, I'm happy to be here. You stuttered a bit at the start the Terrace Crew. Are you thinking about changing your name for next year? Not happy with the results of 29th overall or 26th? What was it?
23rd.
Yeah. That's right. Maybe the goats for next year. The Kings. King James.
Yeah, no. Terrace Crew will be sticking around, I would have thought. I've just had that name for so long. I don't know why, but basically ever since I've had a fantasy team and anything, we've been the Terrace Crew. So, yeah, won't be getting rid of that. But what category are you looking forward to the most tonight at the Golden Baller Awards?
I'm looking forward to debating the MVP of the season. Ooh, I think it's people can gravitate towards just the highest averages, but I think there's a bit more depth that goes into it. I like to think of it as the biggest impact on your team for the most valuable player.
Much like the Dally M Awards are on this week, they're always hotly contested, and we're allowing the baller community to put in their say, and we're going to have the Ballers' Choice Awards for the Golden Ballers as well. So all the names you'll be hearing tonight, you'll be able to vote on in the Discord. We've already launched in the Discord and also via your emails. You would have got a nice little baller email there for everyone signed up to the mailing list. If you're not, please go and create an account at baller.live where you'll be able to vote. And we have a prize for a random draw for everyone who votes on the Discord for a baller merch pack. So very easy to get involved and vote for your favourite in each category. Also joining us tonight, it's coach of CMAX 86ers, and he's actually been assigned the MVP as his decision tonight after it's been debated. After such a good season with the equal highest rank during the season of 6th, it's coach of CMAX 86ers, CMAC. How are you, mate?
Way to put a positive spin on it, Matt. Thank you very much for that. Yeah, very excited to be giving the big gong. Look, all categories will be hotly debated. The one I'm looking forward to most is the hot hand. It's a shame Jono's not on hand to help us with that one.
No, well, he's the major sponsor of the Hot Hand Award, of course.
And rightfully so.
Yeah, correct. No, he's put in some input and some feedback. That was a very hard one to chop the nominees down, so we'll go into some honourable mentions there. But, yeah, like I said, make sure you get into Discord. Make sure you get onto your baller email and head in there and vote. And we're going to announce the Ballers' Choice Awards during the Dally M ceremony on Wednesday night. So please get in there and vote. Now, we're going to kick off tonight, boys, with the tried and true, the cheapie of the year, one of the most important aspects of Supercoach when you're starting the season to build your team. And Tubes, I'd like you, please, to read out the nominees for cheapie of the year.
Yeah. Just before I do, can I just did CMAC and I miss a memo about dress code tonight? I know it's the awards ceremony, but should we have been suit and tying or jacketing up? Did we miss something there?
I just thought, Tubes, that you've worn the suit jacket with aplomb so many times this year that you would have turned up to Ballers Night of Nights wearing the suit jacket. And so I was just trying to fit in. But of course, I would be wearing as host. You don't see Bruce McAvaney or Andrew Dillon or whoever hosts the Brownlow Medal these days turn up in their baller hoodie. So I've of course come in my baller suit tonight to host the awards.
Mm. Fair enough. All right. Yeah. Well, kicking off for the cheapies of the year, and you know, I'd like to offer them a, if they reach out, they can have one of these pristine baller hoodies themselves.
Absolutely.
And the nominees are Dylan Egan from the Dragons, who averaged 65. He got to a peak price of 522K. Big Red from Gerringong, absolute amazing season. Bobby Robert Toya, averaged 58, 609K was his peak price. Jackson Purdue from the Cowboys peaked at 638K, so very high peak, but only ended up averaging 57 for the season, probably a little bit in 5'8". And then also Gurmat Shibasaki, averaged 66.2, 659K. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's pretty clear cut to me. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's interesting looking at the nominees because I thought this was hard. We've obviously also got Rookie of the Year, so just a little distinguishment there. This is obviously who's made the most money and had the best impact on your teams. Purdue was an interesting one, Chris, because a lot of people sold him after an inauspicious start. He also then caused teams a lot of headaches later in the year. So he really only had that short burst when no one actually played him, but he did end up making some good money.
It was only the chosen few who'd be voting for Jackson Purdue. Danny Boy might be one of them, but I was off round three and I was kicking myself there for a while.
Yeah.
But, you know, the back end.
He was a good cow.
Danny Boy wouldn't vote for him. He sold him in round three.
Yeah. Oh, did he?
Bought him back at that peak 600K price then held him down to 400.
Oh, sucked in there.
Bobby T Tubes, he had an interesting year. He was kind of considered unplayable at the start. Then he busted out with that monster score, I think like 140 something in Magic Round. He then had another big peak game later in the year. Look, he did a job, didn't he? But there was a week there where everyone sold him off.
Yeah, but then he got picked for Origin, which was no good for Supercoach because he then didn't cover the buy periods for people as well. Little dent in Shibasaki there, actually, particularly in my team at the end of the season, getting picked in Origin 3 and costing me a number. There's a little dent against his name there from a Rookie of the Year perspective.
He had the highest peak price. He had the highest average. He played State of Origin.
Missed one or two games, and one of them was due to having a big night out and turning up to training in the wrong state. So
big red Dylan Egan though, Tubes. He sort of just was a whirlwind. He was like a Tasmanian devil. How he came on the scene there, sort of just after the start of the season. 65 points per game, as you said. He started, he tunned up in that game when a lot of people brought him in. He made a big chunk of change. He was the hot hand of the cheapies, you might say.
He was on track. He just got injured, unfortunately.
ACL, yeah.
And similar, Spicy Tamale started the season red hot. I actually jumped off him and he just kept on busting out. And then he eventually got injured as well, right around the time he was starting to peak.
You mentioned an honourable mention there for Spicy Tamale. Katonga from the Eels, he was just an no one ever owned him, but he was an under the radar cheapie, made about 400K at one point. And then Leka Halasima, who we should see a bit more of tonight, Tubes, in the Rookie of the Year. He was Chris, what was the go with Leka? He sort of made a bit of money, didn't he? But he was just a bit. He had that bench role, so he was hard to trust early, wasn't it?
That's exactly it. He was great. It just more minutes would have been awesome. I think Jono picked him up at some period.
I had him.
Tubes had him. There you go. But
Grado.
Was he
quality? Great. Absolute quality just player.
Fun to own. Fun to watch.
Yeah. All right, Tubes. Let's wrap it up. Who is the Golden Baller Cheapie of the Year?
Well, there's only one man here that was compared to a young Greg Inglis by many NRL pundits out there, and that is Gurmat Shibasaki. And I think it's a very clear-cut victory. He was trading, I think he was unbackable. He was 101 and then went straight into couldn't back him.
That's a softball of all softballs to throw you tonight. First first selector of the award there, Tubes. Shibasaki, unbelievable season. Tubes, we've got to give a shout out to you too. You coined the phrase young GI. What was it, after round two?
Round one.
Wow.
Ridiculous. It was then, when they beat the Roosters by, they put 50 on the Roosters. Right. And I was calling the Broncos at that point of the season. Like, you just had to jump on. I didn't know Shibasaki. He wasn't in my initial squad. I bought him after week one.
Oh, you saw enough.
Then held him. Held him all the way through.
Yeah. No, huge shout out to Shibasaki, a.k.a. Young GI, because he's been amazing for the Ballers this year. And, yeah, very, very deserving winner of Cheapie of the Year. We might see him back with a bit more gold later in the show. All right, moving on now to Pod of the Year. Now, this has always been one of the favourite awards ever since the SC Ballers were known as the Pod and the Poddies was the name of the awards back then. Now the Golden Ballers, Pod of the Year, one of the most prestigious awards in the baller community. Chris, you will be deciding this year's winner, and please take us through the nominees.
Oh, with pleasure. So the nominees for Pod of the Year are Connor Tracy with an average of 62.5, a peak ownership of 10%. Talis Duncan, or Talis Tunken, as you penned him. Yep. He came in with an average of 60.9 and his ownership topped out at 5.4%. Daniel Tupou, 65.1 average. Ownership at 2.7. That feels very low for Daniel Tupou. And the last of the nominations, Ethan Strange, averaged 62.4 and his peak ownership was at 9.4%. We'll go to you first here, Tubes. What which of those four do you want to talk about?
I owned Connor Tracy when he had a very nice run prior to Origin. And he was a great pod, but he unfortunately he was only a pod for about 2 weeks of the year, and then everyone seemed to jump on him and then got injured. So I think that, whilst he was a fun pod to own for probably 2 weeks there, he just didn't hold on to those pod credentials enough throughout the season.
See, I like that, Tubes, though, because he was a pod when no one owned him, he did amazing. And you and the pod father jumped on. And then when everyone jumped on, he went terrible.
He went terrible, so yeah.
He gets bonus points for that too, because when he was higher owned, he went bad. But when he was less owned, he was a great pod and did really well. So I quite like that.
Felt
that
more comfortable in his state of pod.
Dan Tupou was an interesting one because he was very consistent all year. He just had a bit of a spell there where he never scored a try. But he finished the season incredibly strong, C-Mac. I would say from a consistency perspective, he would have been one of the pods of the year.
He's always up there. He's always one of those guys you sort of think about getting. It was such a hot field this year in the CTW, so it was sort of hard to fit him in at times. Obviously, peak ownership was only 2.7, so not many were able to.
No.
But, yeah, he had another wonderful year, scored plenty of tries. He was the 5'8" who came in. His name escapes me.
Savala.
His kicking game and Daniel Tupou in the air were just a match made in heaven.
Yeah, that's actually when it sort of coincided with a lift in form for Tupou in round seven, which was, I think, around the time Savala came in, actually. Someone was starting halfback for the year anyway. They went
Sandon? Sandon Smith.
No, Sandon was still there. That was
Chad. That was our boy Chad.
That's right. Only one ton for Tupou, just very consistent all year, high floor, low ceiling, meat and potatoes pod. Ethan Strange, 62-point average. He was a little bit more, he was the other end of the spectrum, very high floor, very low ceiling, but certainly did a job for his owners who jumped on as a pod. I want to give a shout out to some honourable mentions here, aka AJ Brimpod, aka AJ Brimson. I just don't really think, he had the best year, even as a pod, Brim Pod. Nafahu, who Tubes, I know you owned towards
the
end.
Hold on, I was on mute there. Like, Brimson should be winning this. Like, that's a joke. He's an honourable mention. And he's probably because he's too pod for template team Matty Boy here. That he's not even in the nominations. Brimson averaged 66.8 across the season. He started as 539K and hit the lowest price he got to was 498K and then ended the season at 688K. Had a final five-round average of – I had it up a second ago, so I'll get it back up. He had a final five-round average of 79.6. So when you needed him, he was coming through right at the end. And never would have been at more than 10% owned across the whole season from an ownership perspective. Great pod of the year, not an honourable mention.
Right. So you're saying that it's a complete oversight by Ball Towers to have left him off the nominee list here. And is this an official protest to get him in the nominations?
I think he should be in the nominations. I'd vote for him. I don't mind some of the others. Like, I don't mind Ethan Strange. Daniel Tupu, like, yeah, leave me out of that one.
I thought Tupu was a good pod. He's the highest averaging pod I've got on the page here. Very consistent.
He is. He's not as high as AJ Brimson, though.
Look, let me just give a couple of other honourable mentions. Tevita Navahu Tubes, you owned him at the end of the year. Probably just didn't do it for long enough, but an unbelievable cheapy pot at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah, he was good. He was a beauty. He was a beauty. Like, as in, I think, I'm not going to bother looking up his stats, but he turned up the last two games when I needed him most. A
couple of honourable mentions for him tonight, I think. Jackie Boy Williams, look, Gramsy made me put him on the sheet. That's enough said there. And Jaden Suar, probably just not relevant enough this year, Jaden. Chris, I just like you. Tubes has thrown an absolute fireball at you there. I'm going to leave it down to you. We didn't talk about Talas Duncan quickly. We need to talk about Talas because he was an unbelievable pod. The numbers don't really tell the full story here because he was irrelevant up until
completely irrelevant. Yeah.
Post that sort of late origin period.
Scoring tons and tries. He was amazing.
So round 15, he went 113, 63, 134, 105 in a four-game stretch. Then he finished the season 105, 115, 51. So just Talas Duncan. Jono had him. He lifted teams up into the top 10. Like, just incredible.
Peaked at 746K too, right when you needed it, people building bank.
Yep. I don't really have a favorite here. I like Tracy, even though it was fleeting because he was such a great scorer when he was a pod, and then whenever I jumped on, they were too late. So I love a story like that. Talas Duncan, probably the biggest upside pod. Tupu and Strange, I agree. Like, they're not the most exciting, but they're in the nominees. And then we got AJ Brim pod. Like, this would be the highlight of AJ Brim pod's career, winning the pod of the year. From not even being nominated. So, Chris, I'm gonna leave this in your very capable hands to decide the winner.
It's really difficult. Like you know, you've run through the nominees and the honourable mentions, and like you say, no one stands out. So, just because there was so much conviction in his cell, I'm gonna go way off script here and go AJ Brimpod.
Yes.
Pod of the year. Yes. Tubes, you sold it brilliantly. Yes. It's just so much emotion, and I loved it. So I'm on board with Brimpod.
Unbelievable. AJ Brim.
I think it's a photo finish with Talas Duncan.
Talas Duncan, those scores were unbelievable. That was such a phenomenal run. You're right with Brimpod. Amazing. Amazing
he averaged,
season.
Just on Duncan, he averaged 40 points to round 13, and then he averaged 81 points from round 14 on.
That's amazing. That is amazing. But no, I've gone with Brimpod.
Yeah, mate. Well done. Well done, Tubes. Well put forward argument. And we're fast and loose here, so I don't mind that kind of action. Next award, boys, is the flop of the year.
Send him off! Send the drinking age off! Get him off the field!
And now, look, we don't like to be too negative at Baller Towers or on the Baller podcast, in the Baller community in general. We're very inclusive, but we got to call out mediocrity when it is in front of us. And the flop of the year will do just that. So the parameters around the flop of the year is someone who is expected to do very well. Sort of think about your high draft picks in draft as well, and then they just never hit the heights that were expected, and they put the kibosh on your draft season. And for some of these players, they put the brakes on people's classic season as well. So the nominees are Jermaine Hopgood, Parramatta Eels, average of 53 points. David Fifita, Gold Coast Titans, average 49.5 points. Kalen Ponga, Newcastle Knights, average 62.2. And Jerome Luai, average of 47.6. Now, they're the official noms, boys. The honourable mentions here, Britton Nicara from the Sharks, Dylan Brown from the Parramatta Eels, and Angus Crichton from the Roosters, who all had relatively stinker of seasons to how they were expected to go. Now, that's quite this was a very easy list to put together, boys. It's a hot field of flops. Chris, I'm going to start with you. Who do you want to have a quick chin wag about on the flop of the year?
Look, it wasn't someone I owned, but I know at the start of the year, Jerome Luai had huge ownership.
Huge.
His move to the West Tigers, everyone was thinking the role was going to change, but let's be honest, it didn't. Supercoach wise, he was not relevant. The excitement about his move to halfback, it dwindled very, very quickly. I'm actually surprised he averaged as high as 47.
Yeah, well, Chris, I got some numbers for you to start the year. He had an okay start, round one, 54. So, you know,
not too bad.
Not too bad. Then it went 19, 20, 19, 21.
Well,
so for that four round stretch, he averaged 19 point something points.
Unbelievable. That's just a floppy disk. That's terrible.
I'm also getting word through here that Brian To'o is a very bit of a Ooh. He was also a bit of a flop.
Can't get around it.
Bit of injury impact there, but he's obviously come good in the finals. But Tubes, Jermaine Hopgood, as the Fizz calls him. I don't know if it's Jermaine or Jermaine. I'm gonna go with Jermaine.
I like Jermaine.
I don't know. It had to be injury, but he was relatively heavily owned as a second row sort of upper range pod to start the year. He had that back injury and I think a bit of knee issues as well, but he was incredibly disappointing.
Yeah, I don't think you put it on him. Like he did have a few injuries, but also it was a bit of Ryle's team selection at the beginning of the year. He found some form at the back end of the year once Ryle started playing him the minutes in the front row forward.
Yeah.
And I think he'll be a red hot pickup at the beginning of next year if he keeps playing with that role. So I think he, like from a team impact point of view, I think those that started with him, like I think Chris and myself started with him and he was a round two or round three flip to Haas. Didn't cost you much. He was out of your team. You just knew the role wasn't going to be there. For me, it's a clear-cut flop. Like, and he's the highest averaging flop on this run sheet, but it's Kalen Ponga. Like, he averaged 62.2. But for me, the flop has to consider the impact it had on teams and the number of teams it impacted. He wasn't Kalen Ponga was coming off averaging 80.7. in 2024 and 87.9 in 2023 and then went on to average 62.9. And that was not injury affected. Yes, he obviously ended up having a season-ending injury, but his average of 62 wasn't injury affected. And you got to remember that this year was the first year introducing the flex, so it meant you were running a three fullback gun strategy. He was in a lot of people's teams. He was a vice-captaincy option. He was a captaincy option. I reckon, all in all, me owning Kalen Ponga, I think up until he basically got injured or at least until Origin, I reckon it cost me in the range of 500 points. And so, like, for that, he just has to be the flop. Like, you could make a case for Luai, like you said, but he was coming into the season's average in 59-59. Like, he's never been a superstar. I just think KP's went... He was the big floppy disk out of all of them.
He's certainly the big name in the list, and it was especially floppy is because he went 82-129 to start. He had that 129, remember, against the Finns in round two, and a lot of Shrewdies vice-captained him that night, if I remember correctly. Not so many Shrewdies captained him for his 45 against the Titans the week later. I sold him at that point, thankfully, to Turbo, or I can't even remember what happened. Like, it's far out, that's a long time ago. But, yeah, then he went 35, 34, 46, 44, and that's the run you were talking about, Tubes, and that was a debacle. It's a bit of a chicken or the egg thing, though, there, Chris. Was it that Ponga was so bad that he was leading the Knights to the doldrums, or were the Knights so bad that Ponga just had no chance?
Mate, what a dilemma. How do you unpack that? I think they go hand in hand. You've sort of brought back memories. I brought Ponga in Magic Round for a great score, and then after that, rubbish.
That's right.
And I can't quite remember when my season went down the gurgler, but it feels like it was around there.
It was after that, yeah.
Yeah. That. Maybe that was the moment.
Dave Fifita is a big name on this list. 49.5 average for the year. He just never got out of second gear, though. He never got out of first gear. He was never owned.
Out of the driveway.
To Tubes' point, he was never owned. So I still think you can consider him a flop, though, Tubes, because, I mean, he was still taken extremely high in drafts. He did get 100. I'm just looking at it here. He got 128. I don't remember that at all against the Dragons in round six. And then people started
owned him.
Yeah, then people were going to buy him, but he was out the week after.
The Podfather bought him.
No, yeah, he bought him in round eight for his 36 in 58 minutes. Then he got injured and he was out for the season basically from there. But yeah, horrific season from Big Dave. Looks like he is off to the Bunnies next year, which is exciting. All right, it's on me here, this award, the flop of the year. Really hot field, as I said. Like, even the honourable mentions, like Dillbags was horrendous. Gus, very quiet. Nicker, very quiet. They were both owned at points in time.
Dillbags for draft, like if you're talking draft flops, I don't know what he ended up averaging, but I took him. He was a top 10 pick because he was covering half and 5-8.
Yes.
And he certainly could have ended a number of draft seasons.
He averaged 55. So very, very disappointing. At least he played relative to Fifita.
Well, he didn't, though, even that much. He got dropped. Yeah.
Before coming back at centre for a few games. Anyway, flop of the year this year in the Golden Ballers is going to be Kalyn Ponga. Well done. Tubes is on a fire here with his arguments. I'm just waiting for one here where I can go hard back at him and get one beat. But congratulations or commiserations, as it might be here, for Kalyn as the flop of the year. The next award is the Golden Baller Rookie of the Year. Now, this differs slightly from the Cheapie of the Year boys, because this is more about their rugby league presence and how good they play during the year, with a little bit of super coach sprinkled on top. Tubes, you are the arbiter of this award. Would you please take us through the nominations?
Can I just say I'm happy to do so. I'm a little bit disappointed, given where we've got C-Mac on the pod. And he was a co-star in the movie Rookie of the Year, a very famous 90s shot movie.
That's very good.
You can play for the Cubs.
Yeah. People might not realize that C-Mac was a 90s kids.
Hollywood film star.
Child
Please
star.
Check that out.
We might need to put something on social.
Henry Rollingardner's best friend.
Very, very... Very good movie, Rookie of the Year. So it would have been nice for him to announce the award, but I'm happy to run through it myself.
I'm rattled.
The nominations are Mark Nwangani Tuwase, commonly known as Marky Mark, throughout the season. Isaac Iyongi, who averaged 65.5. Lika Halasima, we mentioned earlier, averaged 51.4. Spicy Tamale for the Raiders, averaging 55.9. And then some honourable mentions to Savala, Jackson Purdue, Bobby Toya, and Tavita
Nafuhu,
who basically came on at the end of the year and absolutely killed it.
Pretty hot rookie class. I think we could start with Yongi because he was highly touted. He was highly touted as a fullback option. I think he was excellent. I thought he had a really solid year, Chris. 65 points and Yeah, I mean, it's a hot field, but I think Yongyi certainly looks a player of the future.
Oh, I totally agree. Like, and I was very strong at the start of the year not owning Yongyi. I just didn't like the idea of not going in with three gun fullbacks, and that was nothing against Yongyi. He just hadn't done and what your Teddies, your Turbos, the Walshes of the world had done. But during the course of the season, no doubt, he had a wonderful year. He was great in attack for Para, like had some big, big games, some big moments. Look, in this field, I don't have him winning it, but he's definitely had a great year and deserves the nomination.
Definitely deserves the nomination. Tubes, Leeker, as you called him. I don't know how to pronounce that, Leeker or Leeker. Leeker. 51 points, but that doesn't really tell the story. This guy, we'll get to the Marky Mark debate because we haven't actually talked about this. Like, is Marky Mark even eligible for this award? He's obviously not eligible for the NRL Rookie of the Year, but he was eligible for the NRL, the Rugby League Players Association Rookie of the Year, which he won. But Leeker, 19 years old, to be doing what he's doing, tearing through opposition forward packs like he has, you just don't really see that in this day and age. And for that reason, I think he's very, very close to winning this award.
Yeah, and I think it was a minutes thing with him. When he got the minutes, his impact, like his PPM, was unbelievable. Like, and I think even from an NRL perspective, his impact was very good for the Warriors as well. As a 19-year-old, loved to watch him. He was a very viable option to own, particularly sort of from really throughout the whole season, but.
Around 19 onwards.
Like, yeah, but you definitely could have owned him throughout that sort of origin period and origin run where he won over that back row spot for the Warriors and just so explosive. Yeah, it was like I owned him for a few weeks. He was a fun own.
Sab Tamale, incredible start to the year. He's just going to get curtailed by injury again. Just couldn't stay on the park after hurting his knee. In that game, he averaged 56. He forgot how to play rugby league when he came back, unfortunately. But before the injury, he was unbelievable. He's a star of the future, only 20 years old or 21 years old. Incredible. Chris, Marky Mark, what more can you say? Ridiculous season. The question, though, is he eligible for this award? What do you think?
Well, if it's good enough for the Players Association, it's good enough for me. He was phenomenal this season. Some just acrobatic, amazing, freakish tries. He was the big guy in the under-10s. Just feed him the ball and off he goes. Busty tackles, offloads, chip and chases. The bloke had it all. I don't know how you go past Marky Mark or Nwangani Tuwase here. Tubes, a tough
there's
one for
little,
you.
Little, there's a little doubt he's the best player on this list and he had the best
whether
season.
He's eligible.
Most impact, but... Thankfully, we've got the arbiter of truth, Tubes, who will be selecting the award, and I'm keen to hear his thoughts.
I mean, the other spanner that goes into it that we haven't yet even discussed is the fact that he's not even coming back to play. In the NRL next season.
No, he is. He's coming back next season. Then he's leaving.
Okay, so he's back next year. Well, that probably makes a big difference for me. I would think as well. Look, I'm going to pick Marky Mark. He's a clear winner, clear best player. He was unbelievable to watch. Top try scorer in the NRL in his rookie season. Amazing Supercoach record. I felt like I talked about him every week and how much I wanted to own him, and I never once owned him throughout the whole season, including NRL Supercoach finals. And I'm giving him this award, you know, that after he plays for the Wallabies in the 2027 World Cup, the culture at the Sharkies is we don't do golf trips there.
No.
We don't do golf trips.
No golf trips, but we do have a beach.
Yeah. So come back to rugby league and come back to the Sharkies.
Good on you, Marky Mark. Well done, Tubes. I think that's a very deserving winner. And like Chris said, if it's good enough for the Players Association, it's good enough for the Ballers. So congratulations to Marky Mark. All right, Comeback of the Year Award. The Golden Baller for Comeback of the Year. This will be decided by Chris. Now, this award is in the spirit of players who have faced adversity or they've had a bit of a lull in their career and they really made 2025 their own. They came back into the NRL and did an unbelievable job. Redemption as far as the eye can see. The nominees, Chris, if you may.
Yeah, no, nominees are Horse, Corey Horsburgh, average of 61. Young GI, Shibasaki, average of 66.2. Billy Kicks, Philly Army Kickow, average of 66.5. Had a big season after a couple of down ones. And Adam Dewey, average 56.9. Had a roller coaster. He's had a roller coaster of a career, and it was good to see him back up the top of one of those swings this year. A couple of honourable mentions here too. I think it's important to touch on these guys. Tino Fasuamalaawi coming off a really bad Rico. Started quite cheap at the start of the year and was in a lot of teams. And another honourable mention, Trey Fuller. Another one coming off a Rico. He came back into the Dolphins side late and finished really, really strong.
Yeah, he could say that he didn't really go easy on the Pepsi. Fuller when he got back in the team. Look, kick out here is a bit of a controversial one for me because he's nominated. He could have easily been nominated as most improved, but I thought Tubes that he just really embodied that spirit of a guy who started trying again. And he was an amazing own for most of the season, did a great job as a, you know, turning up every week and netting you that 70 points.
Yeah. Bit boring though, just sort of, you know, meat and potatoes, you know.
You owned him.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, like, as in, I think the comeback of the year, got to have a bit of vibes about you, like, and just doesn't feel like a great vibes pick.
Speaking of vibes, I just want to just a quick change of tact. I just want to know what that goblet or whatever it is that Chris is drinking out of. It looks like he's at the Stonecutters for the awards tonight.
You might not be able to see it, it was my present for coaching the Mighty Berry Under 11s.
Lovely.
So it's got that there and then all the names of the children down there. Lovely. As well. So it's a ripper. Yeah, thanks 11s, but it's a beauty.
Yeah, real fry tuck vibes, Chris.
Yeah, big time.
Anyway, we get back to it. Adam Dewey had a nice year. He had a nice end to the year. He was a bit of a frustrating node, 57 points. I really think personally that this award sits in the top two, and that's Corey Horsburgh and Garamat Shibasaki. Shibasaki obviously has won Cheapie of the Year. He's, you know, he was in the running as well for a most improved award. I just, the problem I've got with Shibasaki for this award, C-Mac, is just what's he coming back from? Like career mediocrity? He was never really got to the heights, whereas Corey Horsburgh is someone who has been a gun before. I think he played for Queensland previously. He didn't quite make Origin this year, but gee, he had a good year for the Raiders. And that's why I'd be sort of putting forward Horsburgh for the Comeback of the Year award over Young GI here.
And I think the fact that he missed Origin, from a super coach perspective, actually enhances his claim to this award as well, because he was great through that period. I know the Raiders had a lot of buys towards the back end of the year, but he was a wonderful own and a really good hold for those who held. I think he's hard to beat.
Yeah, he was out of the team. Like Ricky had completely passed on him.
Well, they weren't talking. They were done, weren't
that's
they?
That's right. Yeah. It really went downhill from that, mate. Who made him cry for Parramatta that night? And then he kind of never really, he sort of has taken him to this year to get back from that. Nothing wrong with crying, obviously, but that was really a railroad moment. And Ricky stopped talking to him, not because of that, but because of everything else. But he did. He got injuries and he got overweight. Tubes, I want to hear your argument, though. Like, are you on board with Young GI winning a second Golden Baller award here?
I mean, like, well done, Corey Horsburgh. He got fit. He cut back, dropped from 100 to 20 nuggets. I don't know, whatever it is. Like, and he came into the season fully fit. There's only one man here that was on a train and trial contract at the beginning of the year, had to get a call from Paddy Carrigan to bother, you know, coming down and saying it's worth it. Managed to turn that into a starting center spot for the Brisbane Broncos, played pretty much every game, and then did get selected for Origin. and along the way averaged, from a super coach perspective, averaged 66.2 as well. Like, it's just, like, you know, you don't want to give, you don't want to feel like he cleans up all the awards, but it's a no-brainer from a comeback player of the year perspective.
Yeah. Like I said, my problem is just that, what's he coming back from? Like, complete obscurity. Like, he was in the NRL.
What's Horsburgh coming back from?
Well, Horsburgh played Origin before.
Horsburgh's been relevant before.
Yeah.
So and Shibas certainly hadn't until this year. So
my biggest argument for Shibasaki is that Shibasaki deserves a lot of awards.
Yeah.
And I want to give him a lot of awards. And Tubes clearly wants to give him a lot of awards. But I think we have to give this on merit, Chris. So I'm going to leave it up to you as the arbiter of the award, and very comfortable with whatever decision you make.
Yeah, again, I've got another hard one here, and I think it was mentioned the top two. It's either Horse or Young JI, and you know, as we've discussed it, you know, not talking to your coach 12 months earlier and then becoming ultra relevant and being a cornerstone of your team. That's and he was nearly at the Dragons, like he was all but signed, but turn it around and yeah. The Horse for mine gets comeback of the year. Sorry, Tubes.
It's all right. It feels like a very much a pick that you don't want to keep picking alongside me, and also you don't want to give Shibasaki all the awards. But the listeners out there know the real winner.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see what the Ballers Choice Award for that for the comeback of the year.
I think I'll be in the minority there. I'm sure.
Well, like the pit, if it's a popularity contest, it's all over. Let's be honest. All right, guys. Most improved Supercoach Player of the Year award, which will be decided by me. The nominees for most improved are Dylan Lucas, who bumped his average from 63 in 24 up to 76 this year. Aaron Clark, who jumped an enormous 29 points on his average from 40 to 69. Gamat Shibasaki, his third nomination of the night, averaging 29 in 2024 and averaging 33 in 2023. He averaged 66 for the year. And Blake Brayley from the Cronulla Sharks averaged 53 in 2024 and 67 in 2025. Now, there are no honourable mentions here. No one else was good enough to get an honourable mention. I'm going to give Kikau a little honourable mention because I thought he was very improved. But Dylan Lucas, I don't think is in the running here. I think he's the worst seed. He improved by 13 points per season. I just think he's just on that upward trajectory, though, into stardom. Got curtailed by injury as well. So tough year in the end for Edwards and for Lucas and the Knights. Aaron Clark, Chris. Now, this is the obvious answer. He has gone from a plotter at the Gold Coast where the minutes weren't there. He played a bit of hooker, a bit of lock, a bit of front row, to a ball-playing lock who held the middle together. He got through the tough stuff. He set up tries. He got big minutes. He took his career to a new level at the Warriors.
He got himself a career. Like before this season, you're exactly right. He was a plotter previously at the Titans. He didn't know what position he played. He turned up this year, and I think it was even once Dylan Walker left the Warriors, his role became even more dominant through the middle third there for them. And he was phenomenal. He was so good. Like, not in a million years would I have thought Aaron Clark would have been on my radar as a Supercoach player, even at the start of the year. And I didn't end up being able to fit him in my side, but there were so many weeks where I was trying. He had such a wonderful year, and his role was phenomenal for Supercoach.
He just tailed off a little bit towards the end, but, I mean, he's coming off a very high base, so very hard to penalise him for that. Tubes, I'm going to let you take your pick here if you want to talk any more about Young GI, or you can talk about Blake Brayley.
This particular one I do feel is a lot more up in the air. I know it. Because I genuinely do think there's a big case for Aaron Clark. Like, he played 24 rounds and averaged, 68.7.
Yeah.
Warriors ended up finishing fifth, for the year, very close to the top four. I think you say he tailed off, but, I don't know if he did in the regular season. Like he might have had a tough sort of finals game and minutes wise, but I think the way he performed for the whole year and lifted sort of that Warriors side and took on that new role was very, very impressive. And from a super coach point of view, I also like him a little bit more because he was pod. Like he stayed pod for the majority of the year as well. Like he would have carried pod-ish, a lot of teams. Yeah, pod-ish. Like, but certainly everyone owned Shiba, I suppose, for at some point during the year. Puts a little weight towards Clark for me.
My issue with Shiba is, again, same as last week, he wasn't coming back from anything. And it's hard to say he improved off one game of 29 last year. So the base of the volume of work of being crap just wasn't there like it was for Aaron Clark. Blake Brayley is probably in the middle there somewhere, just not as extreme. He's always been a consistent player. But Chris, he really had that hot hand, and he's not nominated for the Hot Hand Award tonight. But I think I think that's because he maintained a high level of consistency. But no mean feat to get your average up 14 points off a 53 base.
Oh, I think it was the Sharks' home game against the Roosters when he just decided to run. The forwards laid the platform for him, but once that moment hit, he became super coach relevant. Blake Brayley's played 150 games straight, 80 minutes every week, and I've never thought of him as an option. Not even batted an eyelid at him. And I'm a Sharks fan, loved him. And all of a sudden, he became super relevant at the back end of the year. He was tonning up. Attacking stats were there. You know, he makes 40 to 50 tackles most weeks, but then he just found another part of his game that was unreal. So his turnaround and improvement in his super coach output was 13 points or 14 points doesn't feel like enough. I feel like it was more. And probably for the back half of the year, he would average more.
I mean, I think it's pretty outstanding, really, given the role that you play as a hooker. To be able to get your average up that much, it shows that you're running the ball more. He's going to be a very interesting option to start in 2026. All right, guys, I am going to award this to Aaron Clark. He's improved his output by 29 points per game. The role there, I think that's a very, very deserving award for Aaron Clark for his efforts in this year's Supercoach season. Takes me back to the most improved award at Joey's that I think I might have won in the under-9s. Maybe the only trophy that I ever won as a junior footballer, where I improved. I don't know what my super coach output would have been. It probably went up like 3 points per year. I actually made 3 tackles a game instead of 0. So, it holds a special place in my heart, the most improved. So I'm glad I got to award that to Aaron Clark tonight. All right, now we're getting to the pointy end, boys. Just 2 awards left, and this is the last award before the MVP. Now, this is a brand new award. It's the Golden Baller Hot Hand Award. Now, the Hot Hand, this is named after Jono, who regular snappers would know. Tubes has been calling Jono the Hot Hand all year. Basically, the man with the plan, the player who just went on that hot streak. You had to own them or you got left behind. And Tubes, please give me the nominations and for the rounds that they are nominated for their Hot Hand Award.
So nomination number 1 is Herbie Farnworth. We've got it here round 14 to 22, where he averaged 99.7. I feel like that could be his whole season he was the hot hand for, but we'll happy to leave it at round 14 to 22. Clint Gutherson, geez, this is a throwback. Round 1 to 5. Clint averaged 109 in his first 5 games for the Red V.
The streets will remember that. The streets will remember that big turn against Parramatta in, I don't know what round it was. Round 4, yeah. Round 5.
I captained him that 130 day. I'll never forget.
Yeah. Dylan Edwards, round 14 to 24 when Cleary went out, he averaged 102.9. The big one is once Adam Reynolds went down, Reece Walsh, rounds 22 to 27, he averaged 126.3. We could probably extend that out into the finals run, but yeah, very hot hand for Reece Walsh.
Did Reece Walsh get a 24 in that run against the Storm as well?
Yeah.
That is so absolutely phenomenal.
Just, a couple of caveats here. That 126 average includes a 26 against the Storm.
Wow.
And Herbie's 99 average includes a 69 in 18 minutes against the Warriors when he got injured.
Did his hammy,
I think this is obviously going to be relatively clear cut for YouTubes to end your night. Don't want it. Just a couple of honourable mentions here. Talis Duncan. I feel bad. Talis is going home without an award here, but honourable mention. Fletcher Sharp, very consistent hot hand to start the year. Lehigh had a few games there of being a hot hand. Probably a bit narrow, but shout out. Swarker, Chris, I know you're a big fan of him when he came back.
Yeah, he played unreal. He came back and lit it up there for a while. It hurt Teddy for about a month or so till they worked it out. But, yeah, he came back like a house on fire.
Tevita Nafahu just the finish to the year where Tubes owned him for that 124 and 170. He dipped his hand in the fire there. That was bloody hot for two rounds.
Yeah, what a beauty. That was very nice.
And then finally, I think this bloke's very tough not to get it, very stiff not to get a nomination. But, boys, I don't know if you remember, but Keon Koloamatangi, that little Origin period in the lead-up to Origin run where he had the highest base game of all time, just incredible. But I'm pretty comfortable looking at the numbers. He had 3 tons in a row, so I can see why. Just going back to Gutho, though, I just want to talk about Gutho quickly. That I think people forget that start to the year. So he started the year 113, 146, by 47, 130. So that was just unbelievable. Everyone thought, like, what the hell is this going on with Gutho? Obviously it didn't last. Because then it went quite downhill from that. He did have 2 more tons for the year, but he was never really relevant again. I'll let someone else chat about Dylan Edwards if they want, Chris.
Oh, I think it coincided with Cleary being out, and that's about all you can say. He played; he was very on the ball, took over the goal kicking in a team that were starting to turn their season around. But it feels pretty clear cut on the honourable mentions. I back you. I thought Keon had a wonderful little period there. Well, obviously wasn't good enough to get a nomination, nor to get selection by Laurie. Thank you very much, Mr. Daly.
I think Keon, in my mind, just for those that run of 3 games, like leading into Origin, he could easily be the hot hand nomination over Dylan Edwards, that's for sure. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. There's one clear cut winner, and that's Reece Walsh. So I'm handing over the award.
Well done, Reecey. Very, very well deserved. That also segues in nicely too, because Reece Walsh will get an honourable mention for the MVP award coming up here now. So we are at that time of the night, boys. The big one, the Golden Baller MVP of the year. And Chris, you have been bestowed the honour of announcing the baller, the MVP Golden Baller of the year. And I'm going to let you run through the nominations.
Firstly, what an honour to be giving this award. Such a hot field. It's been a big, big Supercoach season. And the MVP at the end of this will be well and truly deserved. So the nominations for the Golden Baller MVP are Terrell May, who averaged 83 and finished on 1,991 points. Second, Sexy Herbie, beep, beep, Herbie Farnworth, averaged 84 and finished with just over 1,600 Supercoach points for the season. The next nominee, Payne Haas, averaged 87, 1,831 Supercoach points for the season. And the final nomination, James Tedesco, averaged 88.9 for 2,133 points. Points total for the season. We'll go into the honourable mentions straight up, I reckon, Matt. Reece Walsh, who obviously just got the hot hand award and was very well deserved. He had a wonderful year. He had some down weeks, but finished like an absolute house on fire. And the other one was Drinky. Like, real honourable mention to Drinky. I feel like he's up there every year, Matt.
He's unbelievable, Drinky. Like, I didn't start with him, but I brought him in relatively early. Yeah, he had 3 tons in a row from round 8. Probably a bit unlucky to not get an honourable mention in the hot hand there. That 14 in round 11 just cost him a bit. And if the Cowboys could have held any form, but yeah, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 tons at a 99 for the season. Just ridiculous drinkies. He's one of the best Supercoach players of the last 5 years. So very, very worthy honourable mention for drinky. But Chris, I think this is so open. I think all 4 of these players would be worthy winners for MVP award, and it's for very different reasons. I'm going to put forward to start Terrell May. Now, he averaged 83 for 1,991 points. I just don't think we've ever seen a consistency beast like Terrell May. He was owned in teams in the top 1, 5, and 10% by 99.9% of teams. He was the only player that every team you had to own. Haas had a few injury problems. He had Origin. Terrell May had none of that. Every team owned him. And he delivered every week. Like, he never, ever let you down. He was a captaincy options at times. I captained him for his 123 against Souths. He had a low score of 57, which is a joke.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and that was in his lowest minutes as well, in 64 minutes. He just he could ton up. He had a ceiling, but he just was so consistent, the likes of which we've never seen. So, yeah, I think he would be an incredibly worthy winner.
The likes of which we've never seen is a tricky one when the other nominee is Payne Haas, who's averaged 87. Also in the front row position in a very consistent basis. I know it felt like he had injuries and he missed games, but he really only missed the Origin games. He actually played 21 rounds this year compared to Tyrrell's 24 at an average of 87.2. I think these two hurt each other's nomination. Mm. So if you take the two out, the closest front rower average was Tarpany at 71.8, so 12 points behind Tyrrell and 15 points behind Haas. Like, but the fact that they both did it in that front row forward position, I think it hurts them a little bit, like, as in, you know, in terms of being that standout. The one I'm putting up, and I never owned it basically all year, is Herbie. And a little bit because he was the out and out until his injury, absolute premium must-own center wing option that was clear cut above his peers. He averaged, as we said, 84.4. The next closest average was Zach Lomax, who averaged 78.4 and also missed some games throughout the year. So he was 6 points above his closest center wing. And we talked about that really great run during the Origin period that helped out the teams. But I think the other big part is remembering he did this in the center wing and he's not a goal kicker. Like, he just did this in all base plus power with some attacking stats. Like, it's unbelievable.
Speaking of not being a goal kicker, Chris, James Tedesco, also not a goal kicker. He's a fullback. He's 32 years old and he has scored the most points by a country mile here with the highest average. I know he's in the most attacking position at fullback, but like, I don't know what there is to say about Teddy. Every year we wait for him to fall off a cliff and every year he proves us wrong.
Well, it was expected at the start of the year, wasn't it? Like, his ownership wouldn't have been quite as high as those other.
He was very expensive to start the year.
That probably helped. But also there was a bit of narrative around he was sort of done.
Mm.
Hasn't he turned that away? I think he got...
He was done.
He got 8 tons with 390s as well. Like that, and one of those tons was nearly 200, and he finished the season with 231s. Like, absolutely phenomenal. He had that down patch, if you could call it that, when Swarker came back. They were just working out their style again. But I think even that was only 3 weeks. Looks like it was three weeks. He had a 37, a 44, and a 60 against Melbourne, which doesn't seem so bad either.
No.
And after that, he was back into it. So he had a phenomenal year. But all four, like, seriously, for different reasons. Well, Payne and Terrell very, very similar, but they just had wonderful, wonderful seasons. Payne Haas, just an absolute beast, like a front rower who can get 140. Unbelievable. Terrell May, Mr. Consistency, and Herbie, just he had spiders on him for most of the season. So it's a very, very hot field.
Yep. Chris, just a few stats to throw at you to help you make your decision. Haas started the season 104, 99, 140, 82. That's ridiculous. Kept it going. Terrell May averaged 88 his first eight games, so out of the block. Didn't miss a game. Played huge, averaged 70-odd minutes, just a joke. Teddy averaged 115 in the last five rounds. He had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 tons as well. I do not envy your position here trying to figure out the golden baller MVP of the year.
Yeah, it's a really, really tough one. Oh, look, boys, I'm going to go with my man Teddy. Teddy's going to get the Golden Baller MVP for 2025. Well done, Teddy. Just, you know,
well
the
deserved.
Top point scorer, averaging close enough to 90.
Cracked 2,000 points. Yeah, unbelievable.
The only man in the field to crack 2,000 points. Gramsy's put in here. His last five rounds, he averaged 115. Like that's probably hot hand worthy as well.
Oh, he won Finn. He won Finn the when Finn captained him for that 189.
Yeah. Well, that's ridiculous. That's enough to get him the big gong, and it was very, very well deserved.
Yeah. Well done, Chris. I thought everyone's selections were excellent tonight. Particular shout out to Brimpod winning from outside the nominations from Pod
of the
Year. It
was the sell from Tubes.
But let's just go over the awards quickly one more time. So Cheapie of the Year, Gamat Shibasaki, a.k.a. Young GI. Pod of the Year, AJ Brimpod, a.k.a. AJ Brimson. Flop of the Year, Kalen Ponga. Rookie of the Year, Mark Nwanganitawase. Comeback of the Year, Corey Horsburgh. Comeback Player of the Year, Corey Horsburgh. Most Improved Player, Aaron Clark. The Hot Hand Award, sponsored by Jono, Reese Walsh. And the Golden Baller MVP Award, the big one, James Tedesco. Boys, that has been sensational. I look forward very much to the Baller's Choice. Get into Discord now or get on your emails to vote. Voting will be open until the sort of Tuesday or Wednesday, I'm not exactly sure. Wednesday afternoon, I'm being informed, before the Dally M's. So obviously the Baller's Choice is a much bigger award than the Dally M's. So get voting now. Tubes, it's been a night. Chris, it's been a night. Chris, thank you very much for your contributions all year and excellent work on selecting the MVP. I thought you really set yourself.
Thank you very much, Matt. What a great year. Had an absolute baller of a year. So thanks very much, boys. That was for you, Jono.
It's been a ripper. And Tubes, I'm going to let you see us out, brother.
It was good to see Teddy take out the Golden Baller Award and you beauty.